Breadbox Media invites you to connect with us. Visit breadboxmedia.com to download the app. Connect with us via social media. Give us your feedback. Get to know your show hosts. Find the program schedule and more. breadboxmedia.com.
This is Manage Your Money God's Way from Compass Catholic Ministry, teaching how God wants us handling money, and we use the Bible as our workbook. You can learn more about our Bible study, Navigating Your Finances God's Way, simply by going to compasscatholic.org. And my guests today are the co-founders of Compass Catholic Ministry, John and Evelyn Bean. Now, the first 30 minutes of today's show, let's talk about coming into some money. So what do you do when you have, let's start small, a short windfall, $10, $20?
Well, Steve, usually if I get a small cash windfall, it's because I found money in John's pockets while I was doing the laundry.
That's not a windfall. That's a very light breeze.
It's not usually a lot, that's for sure.
Because it rattles as it falls out.
It's the noise that it makes in the dryer as it's going around and escapes the pockets. Usually if we find any money like that, you know, in the couch cushions or pockets or whatever, we'll put it in a jar we have that we use to save for our grandchildren's education. Once a year, I take it all out and count it up and take it to the bank, and we put it in their accounts.
You know what? That adds up to anywhere from $300 to $500 a year.
It does.
Just in change, because we do. We're very focused on emptying out our the change out of our pockets or our purse or whatever. And then we put it in the boys' accounts and we divide it by three. They're going to be upset. Well, they don't even know they're getting it, so they won't be upset, but
pretty soon we have to divide it by four.
Once we have Scarlet, then we've got to divide it by four. So it's not going to grow quite so fast.
But what about a really large windfall? Like what if you get an inheritance or a legal settlement or a huge bonus at work? You know, what do you do with that kind of stuff?
You know, there's a lot of things you could do with it. You could use it for a huge life purchase, like a house, or invested in a college fund or for retirement, or, you know, I suppose some people might stick it somewhere and live off the interest, but I think that, you know, I think the better thing would be to invest it and live off the interest later on so that, you know, it has a chance to grow.
So what do you do with a semi-large amount, like, let's say $1,000? I mean, it's not big enough to invest and live off the interest. It's not really enough to buy a house, but it's a good amount, and you have to make good use of it. So what would you do if you got a $1,000 windfall?
Well, going on a shopping spree really isn't a good idea. So let's scratch that right from the very beginning.
Okay.
And you don't want to go out and buy some luxury item because, you know what, that's really not a good idea either, especially if you have some other financial priorities. And guess what? That luxury item, whatever it is, isn't really going to make a long-term difference in your life. So let's talk about some different ideas that we can do with that money. $1,000, you know, that's a round number. And what do we call for the first investment in the emergency fund?
$1,000.
$1,000. So if you don't have an emergency fund yet, and guess what?
Most of
you
don't.
You probably don't. Okay, I understand. I've been there, done that. This is a great opportunity to get it created. And if you've already got that emergency fund, congratulations. But guess what? There's another step. The next step is to take that emergency fund from $1,000 to 1 month's income.
So are you recommending I take the entire windfall and put it into an emergency fund if I had none?
If you had no emergency fund, I would recommend that, unless you were behind on bills.
Okay, that was my next question. Yeah. Can I put, let's say, half of it to start an emergency fund and then the balance to pay off credit cards?
The only thing that concerns me about taking a windfall like that and not putting it into the emergency fund if you don't have one is that when you run into problems like the car transmission dies or the kids in the neighborhood break a window when they're playing ball out in the yard, you're going to run into more credit card debt because you don't have an emergency fund to cover that. So I'd rather see people have $1,000 in an emergency fund and work hard to pay off their debt at the same time.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. It's just, if you have no emergency fund whatsoever, you're never going to get one created unless you create it. And having this windfall is a really easy way to get it started. And I would take advantage of that.
It just gives you some breathing room financially, because you know if something goes, if the washer dies or the dishwasher explodes or whatever, you've got a little bit of a cushion there where you don't have to go into more debt.
So if you haven't fully funded your emergency fund yet, putting that extra money towards that goal is going to give you some nice margin there and a peace of mind in your daily life.
Now, the second thing that we talk about on the Compass Map is giving. Our position is that anytime you get a windfall, some of that money should go to God.
Anytime you get anything, it's a blessing from God, so you should return a portion of that.
Yes, your salary and a windfall.
If you got $1,000, I think it would be very appropriate to put $100 in the collection plate or to give it to some charity that you're particularly fond of.
Yeah, and your church or diocese is a really good place to start looking, especially if there is a need. Maybe the church is trying to raise money for some particular thing. Or maybe your parish is funding outreach work in the community, which our parish does a lot of.
Yeah, it's actually truly amazing what the parish does. We have partially funded about 50% of the operating costs on a monthly basis, a respite care center, 40 beds, and it is a place for the homeless to recover once they've been in the hospital, because the hospital is going to dismiss them almost instantaneously when they're done with whatever the procedure is that they needed to have. Even invasive surgery, they're going to kick them out fairly quickly. This gives them a place for up to 9 months to stay and recover and get their health back. And along the way, they're going to learn some job skills and health skills, it can be a very positive experience for people.
I mean, just thinking about somebody getting released from the hospital with, let's say, a wound that had to be cared for, and they're going back and living in the woods, that's a horrible thought.
Or a broken leg.
Yes.
You know, they go in, they fix your leg and said, okay, you're done.
Yeah.
To get back to the point, if your parish or some other organization that you know of is performing outreach, that might be a place to put the tithe off of your windfall.
So do your homework about charities that touch your heart and find one you're passionate about. Because if you click with a charity that you're passionate about, then you're going to continue donating because you believe in their cause.
What's the other thing we can do with this?
Well, the other thing that's on our step one on the Compass Money Map is to start paying off your credit card debt. Steve, you mentioned that earlier.
Yes.
That's after you have your emergency fund, $1,000. So this might be a no-brainer, but if you have any credit card debt, then it's a smart idea to use extra money to pay off that debt once you have your emergency fund.
Okay, my emergency fund is all set. I've got the $1,000 in there, and I'm working my way to increase that. I get the windfall. I've got three credit cards, each with a balance. How do I differentiate what I pay?
I would take the smallest one, the smallest balance.
The smallest balance.
Yeah, because all the credit cards are the same size.
Yeah.
Take the smallest balance and apply that whole $1,000 towards that balance.
Okay.
Now, if that balance is less than $1,000, bingo, you're going to pay that off. And then you still have money left over to apply to the next smallest balance. And when you apply that to the next smallest balance and you've already paid off the first one, then each month you can take what you were paying on that first card, add it to the minimum that you were paying on the second card, and that one's going to get paid off just that much faster. If you're like me, I have to see success fairly early in the ballgame. It's like going on a diet. You know, if you can't lose 3 or 4 or 5 pounds in the first couple of weeks, I lose interest in it. And I think the same thing happens with paying off debt. You know, if you can't see some real success happen in that first month or the first couple of months, we don't want you to lose interest in accomplishing that payoff.
And do you see that in the couples or the individuals that you work with when you recommend paying off the smaller balance first? Do you see them in the mindset that they feel this is a win? I've accomplished something.
Oh, yeah. They Absolutely. Feel so good about themselves once that smallest one is out of the way. It just keeps them energized and it keeps them going.
And it gets them excited about going to the next one and dedicated, staying dedicated to doing that and maybe, you know, squeezing the budget a little bit to add a little bit more money to paying that off.
Yeah, I can see the psychological advantage.
Yeah.
You're accomplishing something.
You are. You feel good about yourself.
Yeah, everybody loves that.
So the next thing would be, if you've got all of your credit cards paid off, is beginning to work on that consumer debt. That might be a car payment or student loan or, you know, there's all these furniture stores out there that you can buy now and pay when you're old and gray.
After the furniture's been thrown away 20 years.
So, you know, you need to get those paid off, especially if you think you might miss a payment. Because as soon as you miss a payment, all that interest they're not, say you don't have to pay, guess what? You're going to have to pay. It'll come due all at once.
And even if you just knock down that debt by a little bit, you're reducing the amount of interest, so that's a good thing. Less money out of your pocket the next time you get the monthly statement.
And putting it, you know, the $1,000 against a student loan, that's probably the last thing that I'd work to pay off.
Because the interest rates are so low on student loans?
The interest rate is so low, and the interest rates on everything else can be significantly higher, and, you know, I would work to get that stuff paid off first.
The other thing is, if you're in good shape with your credit cards and your consumer debt and your emergency fund, is to start saving for major purchases.
So the big takeaway from this segment, if you come into a windfall of, let's say, $1,000, put it into an emergency fund if you haven't started one already. And as Evelyn said, if you're in good shape, your credit card debt's wiped out, you got the emergency fund already started, then begin putting the windfall into a savings account for major purchases. And we have tips on those next. This is Manage Your Money God's Way from Compass Catholic Ministry on BreadboxMedia.com.
Breadbox Media invites you to connect with us. Visit BreadboxMedia.com to download the app. Connect with us via social media. Give us your feedback. Get to know your show hosts. Find the program schedule and more. BreadboxMedia.com.
Welcome back to Manage Your Money God's Way. In the studio, the co-founders of Compass Catholic Ministry, John and Evelyn Bean. And we're talking about what happens when you get a windfall. Nothing big, let's say something around $1,000. And Evelyn, before the break, you mentioned once the credit cards are paid off and your emergency fund has at least $1,000 in it, then you can use the windfall to begin saving for major purchases. So what's some of the tips for this process?
You know, Steve, $1,000 may not be enough to make a major purchase, but it can certainly be enough to save for a major purchase. So if you're trying to put down a down payment on a house, you could earmark that $1,000 as part of your down payment. Or if your car is aging rapidly, you may want to put that $1,000 into a savings account for a replacement car. Note, I said replacement car, not new car.
So you're talking about needs.
Needs.
Not once.
Not once, yes.
So it's not. Going from a 54-inch TV to a 70.
Probably it's not a good idea. So if you still have a console TV that has legs on it and a picture tube in the back, you might want to spend that for a new TV. You know, and if you've got children, there's always the need to save for college education so that they can minimize their student loans.
If you already have a student, a 529 account, it's a great thing to put that $1,000 into it. And if you don't have one, what a great thing to get started, because you can never start saving for college too soon.
It's almost like saving for retirement. Every little bit helps, and the longer you can save, the better off you are. So that's our next topic, is saving for retirement, right?
Retirement. Boy, I can't wait. What am I going to do when I retire?
I know you're not going to play golf every day.
Oh, I'm not?
No.
Something tells me there's lists being made.
They're made. They just don't get looked at.
Will we ever see you again?
I can ignore the best list. So, retirement. How are you going to fund your retirement? Have you got a Roth IRA or a regular IRA? Are you investing in a 401k or a 403b at work? those are things that you need to be doing, not thinking about. It's easy for me to say, well, that's something you should be thinking about. No, wrong.
Because time is the most important factor, just as in college savings, time is the most important factor in retirement saving. So the earlier you start to save, the more time your savings has to grow.
And the beauty of that compound interest is the less that you have to save every month.
Yes.
You know, it's not like you've got to save $500 a month to put away towards retirement. That would be absolutely fantastic. But most people don't have a spare $500. So if you start early, yesterday maybe, then it's going to work better for you. You don't have to save so much, and the compounding over a number of years, 20 years, 30 years, is going to allow that money to grow into a pretty good chunk of money.
And what's really nice, on our website, compasscatholic.org, we have several free calculators for you to use, and there are a few of those that are to help you with the retirement. And it's neat to plug in money, a dollar figure, with an interest rate and watch it grow, because it'll tell you how long that's going to last you in retirement.
Yeah, but don't be putting in 15% interest rate as a rate of return. Because that number is going to be huge and think, oh, I got dismayed.
Yeah.
But you'll never earn that kind of money.
Always do worst case scenario.
Yeah, you have to be really conservative. Look at 5 to 7% as a year-on-year average.
So that's your return on your investment. What about the percentage of your salary you should save?
If the company will match your money, then up to, you know, a specific amount of money per paycheck or per month or per year, you should go all in 100% on that amount.
So that you get double your money if the company's matching it.
Well, you know, it might not be double, but you know, what they're giving you is free money, and it'd be like seeing a $20 bill on the sidewalk and just walking by it, not picking it up if you don't go 100%. So first of all, I would go 100% towards whatever the company's going to match. And then if that is less than 10%, I would still save a minimum of 10%.
And that sounds like a lot, but if you're saving 10% of your salary, you're not really missing 10% of your income because of the tax situation, correct?
That's correct, because the money is subtracted from your gross income before the tax is calculated. So if your gross income was $1,000 and you contributed 10%, that would be $100. The tax would not be calculated on $1,000, it would be calculated on $1,000 minus $100, $900. And so you're not going to be missing $100. You're going to be missing maybe 70 or 80.
And you know, that's an excellent point, because there are some companies that do zero matching. But the benefit is it's the pre-tax dollars that you are saving on.
Yes.
So even if your company says, no, we're not going to match at all, don't get discouraged. It's still worth doing the 401k or 403b program that's available.
And, you know, if you're over 35 or 40 and you haven't started saving yet, I wouldn't start at 10%. I'd start at 15, because you're going to need that extra money to allow it to grow. Because if you're 35, to get to 65, that's 30 years. You're going to need every penny you can get in there to grow and compound.
Of course, if you're 35 right now, you're probably not going to be able to retire until you're 70 or 75.
Just focus on saving as much as you can. That's a good thing. And if you can, based on your income, invest in a Roth, I would do that also. Now, a Roth is after-tax dollars. If you put $100 in the Roth, you're going to have $100 in the Roth. You've already paid taxes on that money. The beautiful thing about a Roth account is that it grows just like any other account. Whatever the interest rate is based on the investments, it's going to grow. You're going to have the magic of compound interest. And guess what? When you start to withdraw that money after 59 and a half, first of all, there's no taxes on it at all, and there's no penalty. So if you end up putting, let's just say you, over the course of a number of years, you put $100,000 in a Roth account, and it grows to be worth $150,000, you don't even have to pay taxes on that $50,000 because it's after-tax dollars, it's in a Roth IRA, and those are the rules. In a regular IRA, all your money grows, and when you withdraw, you pay taxes on all that you withdraw. So that is what makes the Roth an appealing investment vehicle.
Let's talk about getting professional help in case you have a little bit of a windfall. Now, I'm not talking about anything other than maybe looking into meeting with a financial advisor or getting your will done with an attorney or maybe talking to an insurance agent to make sure you're fully covered on everything that you need as far as insurance goes. Maybe getting a durable power of attorney or a healthcare surrogate done by an attorney. So there's a lot of things that you can do to shore up your financial life that needs professional help, and a $1,000 windfall would be a good place to spend that money.
We have a Bible study that is focused on exactly those kinds of things, that if you took that Bible study, set your house in order, 5-week Bible study, it will go through all of the documents that you possibly might need, and so you'll know what they are. And the great thing about it is, instead of going and seeing a lawyer and have him sitting there while you think, oh, do I want to do A or do I want to do B, you can already have it all figured out, and so you're in and out of that lawyer's office quite quickly, and you're not spending a lot of money while he sits there and watches your brain works.
He can watch my brain work. That's a scary thought. All right, what about taking care of your home? I mean, everybody has all those little items in the house that aren't quite working correctly. So a $1,000 windfall might be a good thing to use to repair certain key items in your house.
That's not a bad idea, especially if you can do them yourself. Then you're going to get them done really inexpensively. If you have to pay somebody, then, you know, this is a good time to do that. But the other thing is, you know what? The water heater and the stove and the dishwasher and the washer and the dryer, the air conditioner, they don't last forever. They're going to need to be replaced. And they each have their own lifespan, and the appliances typically will last 10 years.
You realize we have 3 appliances in our kitchen that are about ready to bite the dust.
Well, at least 2.
The third one's close. It's whining.
Now's not a bad time to use that money to set it aside to help do that. You know, a $1,000 windfall will get a new dishwasher or a new refrigerator, or, you know, as long as you don't get too fancy.
But, you know, it's interesting. Just this week, I read an article that said the average ticket on a new air conditioning, a replacement unit, is $6,000.
Oh, I would think it would be a lot more than $1,000.
Well, that's the average.
All the more reason why you need to save up for it.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially here in Florida, because you're not going to go without air conditioning in Florida.
11 to 13 years lifespan on an AC unit.
Yeah.
That's another thing we got to it's coming up.
You know, and if you're living up north someplace where it gets cold in the wintertime, you don't want to go without a heater either. So those are some things that you might want to think about.
How about a home energy audit? That's a great way to save money, because a lot of companies will give you a home energy audit for free, and you may be able to make some significant changes for $1,000 that'll help you save money every month on your heating and cooling bills.
We've given you a lot of different thoughts about how you might use a windfall, whether it's an inheritance or it's a bonus, whatever it is, it's your tax return that you didn't think you were going to get any money back. Sit down and think carefully before you run out and spend that money.
That last piece of advice from John is worth repeating. Should you receive a windfall, sit down and think how you're going to be spending that money. Next, if you're thinking about using a financial planner, we have advice on what to look for and what to run away from. This is Manage Your Money God's Way from Compass Catholic Ministry on BreadboxMedia.com.
Breadbox Media invites you to connect with us. Visit BreadboxMedia.com to download the app. Connect with us via social media. Give us your feedback. Get to know your show hosts. Find the program schedule and more. BreadboxMedia.com.
This is Manage Your Money God's Way, and in the studio, John and Evelyn Bean, the co-founders of Compass Catholic Ministry. And a question we get often is, how do I find a good financial planner? This is part of our Bible study, Navigating Your Finances God's Way, that talks about seeking counsel. And John, I'm sure you have a Bible verse for this.
Sirach 32:19 says, do nothing without counsel, and then you need have no regrets. What we want to talk about today is who to consider and how to consider and what to consider if you're choosing a financial planner. Now, certainly you can go it alone when it comes to managing your money, but is that something you really want to do?
You know, me managing my own money as far as the retirement savings would be like me taking out my own appendix. It just wouldn't work. It's not a good idea.
I wondered where you were going to go with that.
No, I think, like you said, it's a good idea for some and a bad idea for others. And I think just based on the amount of time and knowledge we have, probably managing our own investment account is not a good idea for us.
It used to be that pretty much anybody could work on a car, adjust the engine, the idle, and fix the brakes. But with today's cars and all the electronics and you know, everything that's kind of hidden in a black box, it's almost impossible. Money's the same way. It gets more complicated and more complicated, and you're better off finding somebody to help you do that.
And finding somebody can help you save time and money, even though it's going to cost you money, to find a financial advisor to work with, because they're going to help you be disciplined about your strategies, and they'll make the moves for you or badger you until you give them the answers that they need in order to help you out.
You know, it's like doing your own taxes. Used to be, wasn't too much of a problem, but today, you know, the tax laws are like, what is it, Steve? 15,000 pages or something like that? We think it's, you know, the same thing applies to handling your money and investing your money, and it's best to have somebody to help you, and I wouldn't procrastinate on that, because you can create all kinds of problems by procrastinating. I know none of you have ever done that.
Oh, nobody in this room's ever done that either.
Oh, I can say that I have never done it in the last 10 minutes, but... You know, even if you know the basics, it's a comfort to know that you have someone keeping watch over your money.
And that may sound crazy that you're going to pay somebody to keep track of your money. But if you put your retirement plans or the college fund into perspective, it may be even more crazy if you don't have the knowledge and tools to do it yourself.
You know, financial planners advise clients how best to save, how to invest, and how to grow your money. And they can help you tackle a specific financial goal, such as readying yourself to buy a house or to give you a macro view of your money and, you know, how that will play against the various assets that you might have.
And it's important when you're looking for a financial advisor to understand the areas that they may specialize in so that you can pick somebody that's going to help you with whatever you want to do, whether that's college savings or estate planning or retirement planning. So you need to really understand what their area of expertise is as you start to consider getting the help of a professional financial planner.
And it's only advice they're giving you. You make the final decision on your
good
money.
Good point.
They'll give you
very good point.
A lot of recommendations. You know what your strategy is, what your goal is, and it depends on your age. They only give you advice.
That's right.
And, you know, I just happen to have a couple of great Bible verses that talk about taking advice. The first one is from Proverbs 12:15, and it says, "The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but he who listens to advice is wise." So if you would go to a planner and listen to what he has to say, you will be smarter than before you walked in there. The second verse is Sirach 32:19. Do nothing without counsel, and then you need have no regrets. The first thing you want to do when you're looking for a financial planner is to seek counsel from godly people.
So you've got friends, you've got relatives, you've got a staff at church, maybe your pastor or deacon. These people may all have suggestions about financial planners they have used and can trust. So that would be a good place to start questioning people about finding someone.
And if possible, you want to find a planner with successful experience in advising clients who are in the same stage of life as you are. And I'm not talking about, oh, he only works with 25-year-olds or 35-year-olds or 40-year-olds. I'm talking about somebody who's in the basically the same place in life that you are. If you're 25, you could be at the same place in life as a 40-year-old if you've been really diligent in saving your money and that type of thing. And some 40-year-olds or 50-year-olds are in the same place as a 25-year-old because neither one of them have done anything about saving. Find somebody who has had success working with people at the same stage as you are.
You know, in a lot of parishes, there's handouts at the back of church that lists all the parishioners who are in various businesses. So you might be able to find financial planners from that handout. And lots of churches also have advertisements in the back of their bulletin. And you may be able to find some financial planners there. So there's a variety of ways you can try to look for people that will help you manage your finances. And we're going to talk to you about what to look for in a bit.
But I want to make one admonition first. If you're married, make sure that your spouse is involved in the interview and decision-making process, even if their knowledge of finances and investments is very limited. You know, they might really not understand it, but marriage is a joint effort. And the results, whether they're good or bad, of your savings and investments are going to affect both of you. And so you both need to be involved. And the person who has little financial knowledge still understands how to read people and to hear what they're saying. That can be extremely valuable as you move forward.
You know, the other advantage, even if a husband or wife are not into the financial stuff, something may happen to either one during the course of their marriage. It's always good to have being involved in that conversation with the financial planner. You always know who to go back to, and they can kind of keep you updated on what's going on.
And, you know, one of the things that we so often don't do when we're thinking about financial matters is to pray. So if you're really thinking about making a big decision on a financial planner, offer it up in prayer for a few days, weeks, until you're ready to start actually looking. So once you get a list of names and you kind of have an idea of what you're looking for, write down what you want in a financial planner. Do you want them to be in a certain area of town? Are you only interested in certain financial firms? Are there other firms you may want to stay away from? How aggressive or conservative do you want to be in your investments?
Yeah, are you looking for somebody who deals in biblical counsel? Or, you know, are there certain types of products that you do or do not want to invest in? Typical products are annuities and mutual funds and bonds and stocks and stuff. But maybe there's certain types of those investments that you want to stay in, away from or invest primarily in. You may want to stay away from investments that in companies that deal with like gambling or alcohol or pro-choice issues. On the other hand, you may want to invest in companies that are quote-unquote green or environmentally friendly and are focused on pro-life issues or things like not working on the Sabbath. So you got to have all that kind of knowledge of what you want to do settled in your mind so that once you have a list of names and what you want in a financial planner, then you can start investigating.
And what do we mean by investigating? Well, the first thing is to look at their website. What does it say, and does it appeal to you? Is it something that you're interested in? And if you don't have a website address for them, you can usually find a financial planner by entering the name with the letter CFP, Certified Financial Planner, after their name, to find a website or a link to their site. And if you don't find a link to a website, then there may be a little flag of suspicion there, because everybody's got a website these days.
You know, the one thing that Audrey and I did when we interviewed all the financial planners till we settled on one is, when you go into the office, are they talking about themselves, or do they start asking, what are your needs? Do they start?
Are they focused on you?
Yeah,
or are they focused on
them.
What they want to do?
If they start saying, this is what we have available, and this is our history, and this is... So, I mean, that was important to us. We wanted them to focus on us.
That's very important, because if they're not focused on you, they're not going to know what your goals are or how to meet those goals, how to help you meet your goals. So one thing you need to be looking for is a CFP designation, and that's short for Certified Financial Planner, because that's the most significant credential they can have.
The other thing that you might want to do is, once you've narrowed your choice down to two or three individuals, is to check their status with FINRA. That's the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority. And you can go to their website, FINRA, FINRA.org. And you need to enter the broker's full name and the company's full name and probably the zip code. And it'll give you a report on the planner, and I mean, it gets pretty detailed. So once you check all that out, you still have to be sure that they're a good fit for you. The best way to do that is a face-to-face meeting. So call them up and set a time for an initial interview.
And, you know, when you are doing this, you may run into some financial planners who only cater exclusively to people of a certain wealth bracket. So if you don't have $1 million to invest, they might not want to talk to you, which is great to find out up front, because if they're not interested in you, then you really don't want to be dealing with them, because you want a planner who's going to take the time to focus on you and your concerns. And if they're not a fit for you, move on, pick somebody else.
And there's nothing like a face-to-face discussion that's going to help you find all that out and make you be either comfortable or uncomfortable with a person.
You know, another best practice, meet a minimum of three financial planners before you make that final decision. Coming up after the break, we have several questions that you should, let me repeat, you need to ask when you're meeting or interviewing a financial planner. This is Manage Your Money God's Way from Compass Catholic Ministry on BreadboxMedia.com.
Breadbox Media invites you to connect with us. Visit BreadboxMedia.com to download the app. Connect with us via social media. Give us your feedback. Get to know your show hosts. Find the program schedule and more. BreadboxMedia.com.
This is Manage Your Money God's Way. We're from Compass Catholic Ministry, teaching what the Bible tells us are the best practices for handling money and possessions. We do this through our Bible study, Navigating Your Finances God's Way. Go to compasscatholic.org to learn more. John and Evelyn Bean are in the studio, and today we're discussing hiring a financial planner. And Evelyn, you've gone through several good questions to ask when you're with a financial planner. Is there one question that you and John always ask?
Well, see, that's a good question. I think the first thing you want to find out is, how do they get paid? Because there's several pay structures that they use that may impact you, that will impact you.
And you're not going to insult them when you ask them that question.
Yeah, they're used to that.
Exactly.
So the first way that they get paid is a commission for selling certain products. In this case, they may have an incentive for steering you to certain financial products in order to maximize their commission, which may not be in your best interest, because if you're not buying anything, they're not getting paid.
That's exactly correct.
There's a tendency with that kind of a structure for them to churn you into different things so that they can keep earning commissions. So that may not be the most unbiased source of advice.
And you know, you need to understand that going in. And if they're just getting paid on commissions, that could be an issue.
Take that into account.
Yeah, yeah. The second way that they might get paid is a flat hourly rate. Say that fast three times. A growing number of financial planners will make money when you pay them a fee for their counsel. They don't get a cut, you know, a commission from the products they sell, from the insurance companies or the mutual funds or the stocks or anything. And you might pay them a flat fee, like $1,000 or $1,500 for a financial plan. If you're young and you don't have a lot of assets, a planner who charges by the hour might be the best fit, and they're usually best when your needs are fairly simple.
But when you're on the phone making the appointment, you want to understand that. Because if they're going to charge you just for walking in and talking to them, you need to know that before you actually go into the office.
Realistically, they should spend the first hour with you no charge.
Correct.
Because you got to find out if you're comfortable with them. They need to find out if they're going to be able to meet your needs and
right.
requirements. So that first visit should be free, but you got to make sure. Ask the question.
And the third way that they get paid is they're paid a percentage of your portfolio. And this fee may be calculated quarterly or annually.
What it is if you're got $100,000, then they're going to get 1% of that $100,000 over the course of a year. And it'll be broken up by quarters typically. So they would get a quarter of 1% each quarter. The neat thing about that is that they are really incentivized to grow your portfolio. In other words, to be able to create more money in your account. Because if they create more money in your account, they're going to earn more money. By the same token, if they lose money in your account, they're not going to get as much money. This is where risk and your ability to handle risk becomes a significant question. And you have to be really firm about that because they might recommend products that have maybe a little bit more risk with the idea they're going to earn a little bit more money. So you have to understand where you are and what you can handle emotionally.
The other thing to talk about when you're talking about the fee structure is how they get paid. Are you supposed to write them a check once a year or every quarter, or do they deduct it from your investment portfolio?
Yes.
So you just need to understand the way that works so that you're expecting how it's going to happen.
And another thing that you might want to ask them is, do they have a code of ethics that they follow? And you want to be looking for the word fiduciary in language that requires planners to look after your best interests. In short, that means that the planner is pledged to act in the client's best interest at all times. And investment professionals who are not fiduciaries are held to a sustainability standard, which is probably a little bit less, what I want to say, restrictive, or it's a lower standard, and that might not necessarily be ideal for you. But the point is critical, and you know, you should deal with a broker who is really going to work with you and keep you comfortable in everything that they do, the way they do it, what their ethics are, all that stuff you have to be comfortable with.
Speaking of ethics, it's a good idea to do a background check. Now, when you're meeting with them, you can ask them if they've ever been convicted of a crime or if they've ever been investigated by any regulatory body or industry group. So that's a good thing to do. But if you go to that FINRA website that you mentioned earlier, F-I-N-R-A.
.org.
You can find if there's been any investigations of a specific planner. So that's a good place to go for references about whether they're under investigation or if there's been any lawsuits against them or any complaints by customers.
Another thing that you can do is ask about their practice in general terms. You know, what's his philosophy and previous work experience? You know, has he been a planner for 2 years and before that he drove a truck, or has he always been a financial planner? Most financial planners have a typical type of client and who has specific financial situations that they like to work with. That's important to know that you fit that mold that the planner is most comfortable with.
At the same time, if you have a specific interest, such as if you want to maximize your charitable giving or you want to do socially responsible investments, or if you're newlywed or maybe recently widowed or divorced, then you want to understand if they're used to dealing with that kind of client when you're talking to them.
So it's important to find out what the services are that are going to be offered and, you know, if they match your needs. And generally, financial planners can't sell insurance or securities products without proper licenses or give investment advice unless they're registered with the state or federal authorities. Once again, by going and checking the FINRA and CFP kind of things, you'll be able to find that out.
And ask them about their kind of working process. Are you going to deal with the person you're talking to, or do they have an assistant in the office who's going to be your main contact? So you want to understand what the working relationship is. Do they want to meet with you once a quarter, once a year, every other year? So you need to understand, just so you're prepared mentally, for how you're going to be treated as a client.
And you want to make sure they're registered with the state Securities and Exchange Commission, the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. And they'll probably provide you with a form ADV Part 2, which is a very technical, mind-blowing form that basically says they're going to abide by the law. So you ask about their qualifications. What they've done qualifies them to give financial advice. The other thing that most of them have to do is they have to maintain a continuing education
certification.
And you know, ask them, well, you know, are you up to date on your CED, I think is what it's called, continuing education development.
You know, earlier we talked about making a list of what you were and weren't looking for in your investment. So now is the time to bring out that list and talk to them about what they might actually recommend. You know, Steve, you were talking earlier about if they start bragging about themselves or talking mostly about themselves, run like the wind.
Yeah.
If they also start bragging about how they can beat the market averages and how they're always better than the market is, you need to run away from that too, because anybody who's trying to do that on a regular basis is probably taking you into high-risk investments that you may not want to make.
And if they were that good, there would be a line out that door. No, I mean, these are great questions.
You're right.
No, I mean, what we look for, too, is what kind of support staff do they have? Do they have someone on staff that's a tax specialist? Is somebody specializing in bonds or stocks? And like you said about, not all financial planners are licensed to sell everything. And that is a question to ask, especially if you have an interest in stocks, mutual funds, bonds, whatever.
So they should be asking you about your risk factor, whether you're very risk tolerant or very risk adverse.
In fact, probably what they'll do is they'll give you a questionnaire
right.
that might be anywhere from 1 to 3 pages long that's going to ask you specific questions. And you need to fill that in as honestly as possible. Not what you think they want to hear, because that's not what it's all about. It's about basically what this is a risk tolerance questionnaire. And they want to know that if they put you in something that might jump 100 points today and fall 200 tomorrow, are you going to be upset? And if that kind of volatility upsets you, then they will direct your finances into other investments that'll be a little bit more stable. So it's that risk volatility, risk
tolerance
that is extremely important and guides them in how they invest your money.
And they should be also asking you about your time horizon. You know, are you looking to save money in the next 10 years for a house? Are you looking to retire in 20 years? So a lot of this is just them interviewing you and finding out where your heart is and what you want to accomplish with your investments.
You want to do this general discussion. Make sure you're comfortable. Don't just stop with the first guy. Go to a couple more also and make sure that you find the best fit for yourself and for your family. And, you know, you want to be smart when you're thinking about investing your money. Remember the verse from 1 Timothy 6:9. Those who want to get rich fall into temptation and are caught in the trap of many foolish and harmful desires, which pull them down to ruin and destruction.
So if you have interviewed your three financial planners and you're still in doubt, then do more homework and make sure that whatever they're recommending to you makes sense from a lot of different angles. And keep praying. Wait on the Lord to provide the right answer.
Throughout Scripture, we're encouraged to wait on the Lord. So you will be doing the right thing. And if the world's screaming hurry, but our Heavenly Father is saying, let's hold off a little bit, it's okay.
And there you have it, some great tips when looking for a financial advisor. Well, thanks so much for listening to Manage Your Money God's Way from Compass Catholic Ministry. And if you would like to hear past radio shows, simply go to CompassCatholic.org and click on Compass on the Radio. Again, thanks for listening. Join us next week for Manage Your Money God's Way on RedboxMedia.com.
Redbox Media invites you to connect with us. Visit RedboxMedia.com to download the app. Connect with us via social media. Give us your feedback. Get to know your show hosts. Find the program schedule and more. RedboxMedia.com.